Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I didn't think, what is the future? I didn't think, what am I missing out on? I was just driven by the drive to be better at my work based on the fundamental idea that I was never going to be really good enough. So I just had to keep going and going and going and going.
Welcome to hell, or dare I say, let's get the hell out of here. As we in Australia finally catapult our children back into their schools and out of our daytime lives, it's time to say a long, drawn-out goodbye to Welcome to Hell, also known as the transition to the new normal, also known as what size pants do I wear now? I'll be transitioning this podcast feed back into the nitty-gritty committee, stories about the guts and the glory of life from whence it came. So it's still going to have really good conversations with interesting people, but everyone will be sober. I hope you can deal with that. I hope I can deal with that. But that's not starting yet because this is a transition. We need to ease into it. Let's kick off our transition phase with this wonderful woman who was one of my favourite comedians to watch on TV when I first discovered stand-up comedy as a fan. She then became one of my favourite comedians to work with and learn from, and one of my favourite human beings because she's such a smart, soulful and generous teacher. Nellie Thomas and I both love her very, very much. She's Rachel Berger.
Rachel Berger!
Oh my God! There you are. Oh my God, you look so cute. Look at your little
lady.
I was in my hair. I've gone very 1940s. It's all fucked. My hair's so fucked. I put a scarf on and I thought, this is how they used to do it. Like, what's such a big deal? I don't think cute, darling, but, you know, it works. But I thought I'll leave it for the girls.
Most times we record, Michelle also has a scarf. I clearly just shaved it off.
I love it. I want to do that soon, actually. I think it's like a rite of passage, cutting
your hair. I'm just growing out my greys, Berger. I'm like, this is the time because I've wanted, because I've been dyeing it blonde. You can't, yeah. It's so hard to grow out. I thought, fuck it, just shave it, grow it back out, let it be grey without all the half tones and whatever.
Yeah.
This is the time. So this is, what is this, Michelle, 3 weeks?
Yeah, maybe four.
So it's already quite long already, really, for a shave.
I love it. I'm loving the fact that we three are talking because I think, I don't know, how old are you both now?
I'm 46.
I'm 45.
Right. So, you know, I was about 45 when you first started.
Yeah.
Your age when I met you. Isn't that hilarious? And isn't it fantastic when actually, like, you know, you meet a whole lot of people in the course of a career. Yeah. And some you connect with and you stay connected with, there's kind of a sense from the beginning that you have a connection. And others, there is no connection. There never was, there never will be. And you two were two women that I thought, these women are great. And so 20 years later to be taught, it's quite amazing.
Do you know, it's funny when I was thinking about introducing you and, you know, Michelle and I usually do something. I mean, you don't really need an introduction, to be perfectly honest. But I thought, I want to find a way to say, like, for me, you are a very maternal figure.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm trying to think of the right word, because maternal, you go old, dismissive, you know, like it's a patronising term in our fucking stupid culture. But it's the word that I kept coming back to where I'm like, you feel like my maternal presence in comedy. Like,
can I tell you?
In a beautiful way.
Can I tell you? I did an interview with the Sydney Morning Herald during the week about this podcast, and he was like, oh, you know, what guests have you had? And I was telling him what guests and why. And I said, oh, you know, this guy because he cooks and he's funny, and Faye younger because she's now in real estate, you know, and everyone's worried about that. And I said, oh, and we're going to have Rachel Berger because we just always go to Rachel when we don't know what to do.
Exactly right. I have felt relieved all week thinking, it's all right, Sunday afternoon, we'll chat to Berger and she'll give me a plan. She'll give me a plan.
Just go to Berger when we just
Look, it's a lovely comment because the truth is, I guess, and I've been thinking about this a lot, I guess the truth is that, you know, I never had any children. Thank God, because I would have fucked them up so badly. But no, I would have for sure. But I think I was so married to comedy. Because seriously, that was my relationship, my primary relationship.
Yeah.
And so the people that I connected to were, I felt, very much my responsibility, especially the women that I liked.
Yes.
Because I had truly gone through a kind of rite of passage initiation at the beginning. The women that I met, sadly, at the beginning, were not friendly, were highly competitive. Even some of the women which you would respect, but they were still highly competitive because, of, you know, like it was 1986, even in the corporate arena, some of the bullshit that I would hear at these meetings of women have got a, and I don't know whether I've ever told you this, or probably I have both of you, but it's something that sticks in my mind. It was one of the first women's corporate gigs that I did for like women in leadership or something, 1980s, they've all got padded shoulders, you know, that look, they're all like fucking making it. And and they're all getting up there, they're all saying, you know, you have to scratch, you have to fight to get to the top, you have to, you know, just stand on, you know, that was that ethos, you know, from like right through from like mid 80s to late 90s, I reckon. And so they're all these women with padded shoulders and bold suits, bold.
Yeah.
And they're doing that power punchy, you know how they're all walk into the room and, you know, and I'm like the comedy routine. I'm like, so I'm just looking at all this thinking, fucking hell, this is like, I don't like it. I instinctively don't like it, but I'm in a room with like 300 people, women who are clearly successful by current. And then this woman gets up, Della Sargent was her name. You should look her up, D-E-L-Y-S Sargent, S-A-R-G-E-N-T. She's literally got sensible shoes, beige stockings, skirt, and a twin set. they're all like in their probably average age, you know, 30, early 30s to early 50s, latest. So she's older than everybody. She's certainly older than everybody on the panel. And everybody has gotten up and made this big, so you have to fight, you have to scratch, you have to do whatever, get a glass ceiling, smash it. And Della's gets up and everybody's going, yeah, isn't it great, powerful women, you know. Dallas gets up and says, I'm really disappointed. And there's a whole like silence in the room. She said, I'm so disappointed because what I've just seen is patriarchy. What I've just seen is women fighting
to
the top,
to
scratch at all costs, to destroy, to this is patriarchy.
Yes.
Whatever the cost, whatever the price, push everyone as I've got her. She said, I would, and then she said, and one woman, and I think it was a woman that was high up in ANZ Bank or something, she said, success is a triangle. And, you know, when you're at the bottom, you have to fight and claw and hang on to any little rock to get to the top. And when you get to the top, that is your space, you own it, you've made it. Mm. And Dallas referred to that and she said, I would suggest that you look at success as an inverted triangle. Mm. And at the bottom, when it's very, very steep, you do the best you can. However, when you get to the top, it's a very broad, flat platform. So it's the responsibility of the women that are at the top, because they're balanced, to throw ropes to the women at the bottom.
Mm. Mm.
I have never forgotten that.
No, I bet. So
that it's because it's such a powerful image, and she had a lot of balls to get up and say to those women, I'm sorry, I think this is not what we in the 60s fought for.
Yeah.
And
to do that in the room,
when
you're in that kind of like rah-rah achieve, it doesn't matter what the issue, it could be.
Yeah. She was amazing. Apparently in the 70s, at the height of sort of the first, or you know, saw I think late 60s, early 70s, the first feminism run. She was ousted from Melbourne University because she was teaching women's politics. It wasn't even it wasn't even feminist politics. I've forgotten what she was teaching when she was an academic. And she, I think it was Women in Power or Women and something. And she showed a video and at that time would have been a video or footage or film of a woman masturbating to a group full of women, and she was thrown out of the university. It was perceived to be absolutely disgusting. And what her frame of reference was that if women can't actually own their own body, own their ability to give themselves pleasure, then all this academic bullshit was just all academic stuff was bullshit. She got chucked out and ostracized and treated like a piranha, like a, not a piranha, whatever.
Pariah?
Yes, yeah. Say that again.
Pariah.
Pariah.
Yes. A masturbating pariah in Corona.
Yeah, absolutely. Piranha in Corona. What is it? Piranha
in Corona.
Corona.
Do you know what you've just, that story you've just told is, it's reminded me of something that I wanted to talk to you about, both of you about today, because it picks up on something else Michelle and I were talking about. So the last ever, what I would call, you know, the kind of like proper stand-up gig, as in a club, Friday night, lots of people yelling, you know, it was festival club. The last gig that I did was at the festival club and I got heckled. Michelle and I had been talking about being heckled and I won't, who cares, but it was a young guy and he was really gross. And I remember having that moment on stage going, oh fuck, this doesn't happen to me very often. Do I leave or do I smash him? And I chose to smash him. And the interesting thing was, as soon as I got off stage, everyone backstage, in a way that I'd never had in the rest of my career, all the people back, and they were international acts because it was during festival and big, you know, well-known Australian acts, like, oh my God, you're so amazing. I've never seen anything like it. For the rest of festival, I had people coming up to me, oh my God, I heard about you at Festival Club the other night. You know, like it was a big thing. And I felt awful. And I remember thinking to myself, like I couldn't articulate it because it sounds very kind of black and white, but I remember thinking, oh, you want me to behave like a man?
Yeah.
You know, like I don't, that's not how I am in the world. It's not how I live in my own body. It's not the kind of comedy I do. But for me to get you your respect, I had to behave, you know, in maybe patriarchal is a better description, but I had to fuck that kid up, even though he deserved it on some level, but yeah. I had to become him to get your respect. And I never wanted to do it again.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the dilemmas for me in the last 10 years was something akin to what you're describing, because I think for women especially, and it's something I think sort of deeply unconscious, I'd love to sort of write an academic paper about it or something, but something deeply unconscious in all women comics is that we commodify ourselves. And given that even you, I, generation before me, certainly a part of a conscious, we're aware of the process of commodification of women's bodies, yes, of women's voices, of everything female. Yeah. I think although there is the illusion that when you stand on a stage as a woman, you're as equal to the men because you're in the same role, there are no concessions made for you if you've got a late night gig with a bunch of guys that are having a bucks night, you know, more worse, a hen's night.
Yeah.
You have no...
Yes, worse, a hen's night. Never a truer word spoken.
Worse, women are worse. When they're pissed. But, oh, God, I've had women try to beat me up after I've
pissed you. Yeah.
You think you are, bitch. It was my friend's wedding. You know, and I'm saying, don't fuck with me. Just don't fuck. You know, I just turned into a monster because I thought this is that. Anyway, it becomes very tribal.
Yeah.
But I think it's an interesting thing that you say, Nelly, because I wonder if you would have thought that 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you probably would have thought, okay, now I've hit my strides, I know how to do this, I'm in control. And probably there was a point where you did that. Where you
And on stage, while I was on stage, I had that out-of-body experience. Like I'd been heckled before, but never so, it was very sexual, like it was really quite gross. Mm. And I had that out-of-body experience of going, I'm actually going to fuck you up. You know, like you, it's either you win or I win and I'm going to win.
Yeah.
And as I walked off, I expected to feel empowered and I did not feel empowered at all. And even though the people around me were acting as though I should, there was such a disconnect with my own sense of self. And to me, it's a metaphor for what you're talking about. It's a bigger discussion about feminism in general. You know, and the rah-rah, it's like, yes, everyone thought, oh, yeah, she fucked that kid up. He was really misogynist, and he was. But I also felt there was a power imbalance in my direction. I felt that I'd used skills, power, age, intellect, a whole range of things against him. Yeah. I felt like I could have gotten that whole room in a kind of past the conch piggy kind of way to kill that kid. You know what I mean? Like, I felt I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Didn't feel empowering at all.
So this is what I for myself, I've been thinking for a while, that there is, in order as a woman to become equal, you know, to do your work as a comedian, because you can't change the form. The form is the form. The same as acting is acting. You learn your script, you get on stage, you do it again and again and again. Stand-up gives the illusion of, you know, freedom. You say, it's bullshit. You know it's bullshit. It's, you know, there is an amount of freedom, but basically there is a form, and the form is that you're there in front of an audience and you talk. You kind of have a structure. You might go off, but there's still a structure. And the form is fundamentally combative. It may not be overly combative, but it is in its core combative, because it is one single person creating a community, a relationship between a group of people. So you have to really use every single, because you don't play an instrument, you don't mind, just talk, and you have your body. So you have all these things, and a woman is not using her body in the way that women traditionally, we're not singers, we're not flashing our tits, we're actually just using our brain and our physicality to get that happening, right? Mm. So when it comes to responding in the form, heckling someone and destroying someone, particularly, I think, as you get older, I think initially there is, you know, in your 20s, there is a triumph. Then there is a sense of, you know, I've hit my strides. And then I think when you're older and you know you're good at it and you know this kid is like a harmless fucking puppy that's never been slapped and you're just going to go, I'm going to fucking kill you. Because your own thing takes over.
Yeah.
You
know?
And so you do it. What I think is that you then begin to think, I am not actually... I'm not that person. This is what I've been made in order to do my work.
That's exactly right. I felt like a soldier. Like, I know that's dramatic.
Yeah.
I felt when Michelle and I were talking about heckling the other day, the same kind of thing. It's like certain environments change people.
And yes.
To me, that's not going back to your story about the rah-rah, you know, 80s climb, claw your way to the top. That environment is fucked. That is not empowerment.
It's not. But I mean, the other thing that I keep thinking, that I keep coming back to, is it's something that in your 30s, I think, in your early 30s, you can convince yourself that you are taking on that role and winning, and that you have, you know, that you're acting like a man and you're in a man's world and you're winning and you've taken on all of that and you're doing it. But then at some point, you have to accept that the rest of the world isn't playing the other roles that you need to be filled to be able to succeed.
Yes, you haven't bent the whole thing.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that eventually you realise, like, I still am, and in fact more resentful of the fact that all I ever wanted was to play my father's role. As a child, I just thought was, well, I just want to grow up and be you, which is great. And so for a long time I was. But unfortunately, no one else wants to play my mother's role. Right? And so I keep saying to people, all of my peers have wives now. Yep. So we're all the same age.
Yep.
And we're all, for a long time, we all lived parallel lives. But hang on, now we've all got children the same age.
Yeah.
I can't work the way they work anymore, because I also, right now, I'm homeschooling my children. Their wives are homeschooling.
That's right. That's exactly, and this is the unspoken part of all of that stuff is going, and you've articulated it beautifully, to go, okay, well, I want to be like dad. I want to be a provider. I want to be strong. I want to stand on my own two feet.
But I want to get everything that comes with that. And what comes with that is
the fucking wife?
As a person at home who's caring for a lot of stuff, but who is also your great defender, who when you come home and you're tired and grumpy and you're a bit of an asshole, says to the kids, hey, He works 100 hours a week for us. We should really, you know, take care of him, and we should let him sleep, and we should.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have that ally, that defender, that other half.
But even on a pragmatic level as well, the things that are overlooked, like, yeah. Well, and here's your chicken soup, and the kids' forms are filled in for school. And no, yes, you want to do a gig where you get home at 2 o'clock in the morning, no worries, sleep in till 10, yeah. Fine. Yeah, it's nowhere near, you're quite right, no one stepped into the other role. It's just, I mean, it's that classic, who said it, Berger, a few years ago, a famous American feminist of, you know, women, we thought we were going to get it all, we're just doing it all.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know who it was, but absolutely. But do your husbands, you both have husbands, partners?
Yeah.
Well, what role do they play?
Well, they still like play their role to a certain degree. I mean, like Adrian's supported. We don't even live together anymore, Berger. We broke up for a while and then we got back together romantically, but we don't live in the same house because of a lot of it's my independence. Like, I just kind of... Mm. I want my own space so much, my independence, and so it's just, it's weird being this kind of person that I am, which is, my father had so much freedom in his life, and that's what I think, I fucking want that. I want to be this free person who still gets to have a family and still gets to have all of that, which all of my peers have, by the way. All those guys.
They have, just because I'm not in your position, so both of you explain to me, I don't know what you mean by being like your father, Michelle. What was it about that you wanted?
I wanted to come and go as I please, never answer for anything, never...
And in your home life, that's what happened, but your mother did all of that, looked after the kids and did everything?
Yeah. And then when...
At some point, you saw that, you know, that was how you... And you decided you would rather be like him. You didn't want to be like her.
No, God, no. Why would you?
Why? No, not some women did. Would
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So why did you choose him?
Because to me, his life looked more empowered, more powerful, more fun, more less responsibility, less. It just looked freer. He looked free. He just left, and we never knew where he. I mean, he was working, but we never knew exactly where he was, what he was doing. He sounded like he was always. Just chat. He was a taxi driver, right? So he was always just chatting with people. He'd come home and say, oh, bumped into this guy, bumped into that guy, had lunch with this person. And then every night he went to a pub and had drinks with his friends and, you know, we're at home.
And they do get to have it all. That's the reality in that certainly of that generation. And yeah. I'll argue probably still for in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
They do get to go, yes, you can climb whatever ladder you want. Doesn't matter if you're driving a taxi or you're working at fucking BHP or in comedy.
Yeah.
But you can have your kids on Saturday afternoon, have a nice barbecue and your mates around. And but so that's the safety and security of family life. But without the, you know, wiping the ass and filling in the forms.
I remember there's a radio executive, a woman who once said in an interview that she has childcare for like some, and she said the number of hours a week, right? And it was a huge number of hours a week. And it was the talk of the industry. Why?
Well, in a negative thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. People saying, oh, well, of course you can be her if you never raise your kids, if you're never there.
God, people are assholes, aren't they?
Right?
Seriously.
And they resented the fact that she had the childcare.
They weren't resentful of it. They were just judgmental of it. They were like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was that idea of you can't have it all. It's the idea that, yeah. she's gotten to this position by acting like a man, by not taking care of her children, by having kids and then never bothering to be at home with them. And so, and this was, I was quite young at this stage, so I didn't understand what it's like to be a 45-year-old woman who's still trying to work because your brain is still absolutely as active and creative and you still feel as vibrant and engaged, but your kids are so, you know, but you know, it's hard.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Birgit, when Nellie stopped working, that scared me. That I just thought, no, you can't. You can't stop working to take care of your children. That's fucking, no, that can't be right. That can't happen. That can't happen. You're young, you're creative, you're at the peak of your powers. You've got a career. Like, in what world is that, can that happen?
Well, I think it's in the world where, you know, like I had to get to the, as you both know, to the verge of a nervous breakdown to make the decision. Yeah. I mean, it's like how many different ways was the universe or whoever, whatever, let's call it the universe, telling me it was time to change and I ignored and ignored it. Like I took it to the edge to even make that decision because it's a hard decision for a feminist to make. It's a hard decision for any woman to make. But Berger, connected to that, going back to your question about my partner, I mean, I have been that woman in that room of, you know, 1,000 women leaders hosting and said, you know what, myself and my partner are both gender studies trained at university level and we're not even close to equal. And they don't like it.
No.
They do not like, but I thought, for me, I'm like, I know there's fucking women in this room who have to pretend that it's
equal. Yeah.
And I will not do that. I won't bag lock out either because I can give you all the reasons why that are some to do with him and some to do with me and most to do with society. But both of us committed gender-trained feminists in the middle classes cannot achieve equality at home. We've got some work to do.
I agree, and I know women, a lot of women like you're describing, and I've known them through their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and now 60s. What I will say to you to make you feel better, I didn't have the constraints that you're describing, right? I don't think I made a conscientious choice not to have children, but I think I made that choice because I had a very complex and challenging childhood. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if I had children, I'd probably fuck them up pretty badly. And I think I made the right choice. But what it meant was that I had what you're describing, ideal situation. I was financially independent. I had, by the time I'd started stand-up, I'd worked so hard making costume jewelry and I think that I had paid off my apartment. Like I worked like an idiot. I was driven. I was focused. When I started stand-up I was shit for the first 12 months and then I got good and then in 3 years I was working in London. A lot of success. Totally no partner, no nothing, no children, no pet, not even proper furniture. The lovely apartment that I had in Brighton, two-story 1950s apartment, when I went to sell it, I had to hire furniture because I didn't have furniture. I had my office and my bedroom. I had absolutely no life except my work, which I loved for a very long time. It was like this kind of desire. I don't even remember hearing the applause. I don't even remember sitting down and thinking, you know, strategic as people do now because it's much more commodified. I don't remember thinking strategically, do I need an agent or I just fucking did it. Mm-hmm. And I'd sit for hours at night sending faxes off for Edinburgh or whatever. You know, just I kept going and going. I didn't think, what is the future? I didn't think, what am I missing out on? I was just driven by the drive to be better at my work based on the fundamental idea that I was never going to be really good enough. So I just had to keep going and going and going and going. In my universe was that while other women like yourself, the younger comics went off, had children, and before you, there, you know, Wendy, Harmer and Jean Keats and who were my peers, did the same. So I watched, you know, I watched peers, and I'm still going. It all fell apart.
Yeah.
Right?
For you or for them?
For me. For me. Because suddenly through a series of ridiculous, what happened was at 45 and 47, given what you've already done, I think it would be much more useful, and I know it would be much more useful for you to absolutely revel and acknowledge what you have achieved in your work, and that every career that's creative, be it writing, stand-up, acting, painting, whatever, you know, if you look at any career of anybody, writer, Picasso, they are in waves. They are in waves. So that if you look, let's say, at what you've done until now in terms of your careers as the first wave, you can't keep going. You actually cannot keep going because the demands required of you professionally are so powerful.
Yeah.
You cannot be available for your children who you have brought into the world. You cannot be relied upon to be the mother that you want to be while giving 150% to the other. So this phase, this middle phase of your life, is about the children and mothering. Do not fear that if you stop, it disappears. That's patriarchy. Yes. That's the idea that if you don't keep going, if you don't keep going, it's going to fucking go away.
Yes.
It doesn't go away. There are women, people like Leni Riefenstahl, who started making films for Hitler, sadly, at like 60. There are other women who start writing at 70. There are, you know, there are endless careers that begin at that age. So for you, you don't ever lose your creative. I've never lost my creative spirit. I don't think I will. I think at my, you know, I mean, on my, I've said to people on my gravestone, I want, this is your 5-minute call, Miss Bird. I think that women, you know, women, and I hear it too, you know, women 10 years younger than me say, oh, I can't bend anymore. Why are you doing that? You shouldn't be on that property with a wheelbarrow. You'll have a fall and break. Well, I've had several falls. I've fallen. I've gotten really good at fucking falling because that's part of working on land that's uneven and people fall, right? I think there is a mythology, probably patriarchal, probably a lot of those, you know, women who just, people are just lazy. Men and women can be lazy and say, I don't want to do it anymore, or they go through menopause in their body. I think that whatever, neither the physical or the creative spirit disappears. What you have to do is learn, first of all, what do I actually want? What is, where do I, you know, all the energy and the time and the love and the and everything that you put into your children, that will, at a time when the children are not as needy, I can guarantee you, revert back to you, what you want to do.
To something. Well, do you know what's interesting is that I was sitting there last night and it hadn't occurred to me before, but I thought, I feel like a bit like Truman Show, you know, center of the universe. I'm like, oh, I decided. It took me 3 fucking years of my kid being chronically ill to decide to retire for a year at least. And now everyone's retired.
The thing is, you cannot be everything.
No, I can't. I reckon some people can, but I can't.
You can if you have staff.
Yeah.
If you've got nannies. I've seen it with people. A friend of mine's a doctor. She's single. She's divorced. She's got 2 girls. And, you know, she pays so much money for things to be done for her.
I do. Yeah, I do all that.
Because I go, would that actually work? I mean, I know you're missing your year. It's not year.
My Nodgy.
Your Nodgy. Yep. So what does she do on a day-to-day level?
Nodgy comes 3 times a week. So Nodgy's a Hungarian lady burger. And because I always needed nannies when I worked, because I've got twins, I discovered when they were babies that it was cheaper to have a nanny than to send them to daycare.
Yeah.
So, so I've always had a nanny. But I've always had older ladies who will also cook and clean, which is magical. Yeah. We've had Nodgy since they were 2. And so she's a Hungarian lady in her 60s and really she's a nana. They think she's one of their grandmothers. Everyone thinks she is. And she comes 3 days a week and she just cares for me as much as anybody. And she cooks us, you know, European comfort food and makes my bed for me and says,
oh, heaven.
Well, and kisses and hugs me. And
You must be missing her.
I miss her desperately. And then she had an older relative downstairs called Carola, who is 90. And we have Carola come as well. And sometimes we visit Carola. And Carola always says to me, "Oh, Michelle, it's nice to meet you every time I see her." But Nodgy's been in lockdown taking care of Carola, and I'm here taking care of my mum. So we decided, okay, we have to actually ISO separately.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I couldn't survive without my Nodgy. I couldn't do it.
I think everybody, depending on what your work level is, depending what – I mean, I didn't have children. I didn't have a partner. I didn't have – I just worked till I didn't have – till one day I was having lunch with somebody and literally my head just fell into the soup. I was exhausted. I like seriously so exhausted that when I finally backed off,
yeah.
I didn't call it backed off, but when I finally backed off, I probably cried every day for 3 weeks. I didn't even know what I was crying about. It was just my body going, "You are like, how, what are you going to do?" And the irony was that I worked so hard, you know, as a single woman from a Holocaust survivor family. So security was important because if you didn't have money, the Nazis would come and you couldn't pay them off. And there was always someone waiting in the back to kill you and shoot you, steal your money, whatever. So all that paranoia, all that fear, I worked not only creatively to be the best I could be, but because I had a strong idea about feminism and about, you know, socioeconomic ideas and all the stuff that didn't get me on television because I wasn't prepared to talk about being single and fat and whatever.
Yeah.
So which worked against me. Nevertheless, the only way to get a career and make a living was to work, keep working hard live. I remember once doing 3 gigs in 2 states in one day. Breakfast gig in Melbourne in the morning, lunchtime gig in Sydney, came back and did a comedy festival show that night. Uh-huh. And I thought, gee, aren't I brilliant? Until I literally couldn't walk. I didn't even see it coming. I didn't even see it coming. And so what happened, I literally in a 12-month period, I lost it, like every, because I was working so hard to secure my future that I didn't actually realise how exhausted I was. And I made 2 or 3 decisions, which meant in 12 months, not only did I have any money and owned a flat, I was almost homeless in 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really recovered, but thankfully the universe or the gods or whatever have pushed me consistently to situations where I'm challenged again and again and again about why this happened. And I feel very grateful, but it's also made me look in relief. This is a period. See, the thing is, Nellie, I wouldn't have even used the word retired, you know, because you're not retired.
Do you know why I needed that word? Because Michelle's asked me about that. One thing I'm learning about myself in isolation is that I can't do half a thing. Like I can't just go, oh, yeah, do it half an hour a week. I may as well go back to work and make actual money.
Yeah.
So at the moment, like I think, I mean, without sounding completely wanky, but I think you'll both get this, I am starting to do meditation. I am pondering these things. I hope my challenge is to get to the point where I can do a bit of something, but at the moment it's beyond me. So I just went, drop it. And that's why retirement's important for me because I go, you're not working, Thomas. You're not working.
No, I totally get why I get that. And I am exactly the same.
Thank you for downloading Welcome to Hell. I hope you'll hang around on this stream for some all-new episodes of the Nitty Gritty Committee, stories about the guts and the glory of life, starting in mid-June.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.